Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Eric Robinson and Kevin Diebler, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thanks, Mark.
Eric Robinson and Kevin Diebler are co-founders of Rhody Architects, based in Boston, Massachusetts. Today, we're going to talk about launching Rhody Architects back in 2006. Their approach and vision for their firm of architects and designers and urban planners, and their unwavering belief that great design has the power to transform our environment. This is an episode about these guys and this architecture firm and how they started it and where they are today. And so this is going to be a fun one for you listeners who like origin stories and like, you know, to hear the backgrounds on architecture firms. Those are very always very popular episodes. But before we jump into the firm, I want to learn more about each of you. I want to know your origin stories. So go back, each of you, to where you started architecture, who inspired you to become an architect, where did you learn about architecture, share that story to where you are today. And I'll start with Kevin, and then we'll move over to Eric.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Mark. Excited to have this conversation, and I probably have given this a little bit of thought about how have become an architect and how we've gotten ourselves into this position we are today of running a successful firm and growing firm. But as each architect kind of probably has a personal story, it's fun to share it and think about it as I have been. And, I think it really kind of comes back to my parents and both my mom and dad were, supportive of just me, doing something that I love, especially my mother. But as we sort of moved around the country, with my dad was a hospital administrator, we were kind of moving all the time, five times before I graduated high school. I think that my mom kind of saw something in how I was always preoccupied with creative things and drawing. And she sort of like always got me into art classes. And I just was always enjoying myself, being in that space and creating sort of seeing that, at the same time, my dad is a very career motivated person. You kind of grow up thinking you're on some kind of track, and fortunate enough to be able to think about that. And while he think probably wanted me to be a lawyer. I wanted to do something that was more meaningful to me. And I think, again, I always put this, my mom was always pushing me to do something constructive, no matter what I was doing. I like wrecking things in the yard. She was like, go do something constructive. And, you know, so sort of implanting that sense of creativity and being a part of making things. And it was a very enjoyable place and space. And when we ended up in North Carolina, that was in high school, starting to kind of like really choose where I would go to college. I had already decided I wanted to be an architect, and even way before that, an embarrassingly long time before that.
Do you remember what it was that introduced you to architecture, that you knew you wanted to be an architect?
I just sort of felt like seeing, I don't really know where the spark of it is. And I do think that there was this little, you know, maybe my dad said, well, you could be an architect. And like, but like I just seeing these like images of models and, you know, being like seeing people make things as complex as cities happen through modeling and through, you know, this idea of stepping back and actually, you know, seeing that that's how things were created by this process of like creativity. And I think even in high school, my art teacher showed us a video with Le Corbusier, which for a high school student to just see how he evolved as a, you know, from an artist and into an architect, was just kind of mind blowing to me. So it added more mystery. And, I think, you know, getting into the whole, at some point when I was in North Carolina, this idea of NC State as a program was very challenging to get into. You had to have a portfolio, you kind of had to show your creative chops. And I was really challenged by that. And I was happy to not, you know, go to UNC. Like everyone else in my high school class was trying to get into. And I was like, no, there's this like really cool program at NC State School of Design. And it just seemed like an accomplishment to get in. And then it was another tier of, you know, learning and rigor and discipline that that's where, you know, we'll get into how we met. But that was, you know, I guess, you know, hitting a threshold was getting into School of Design. And then I think from there, it was just like really enjoying it and enjoying the challenge, enjoying the collaboration with other people. Studio culture then became a thing of like talking to your classmates and getting ripped to shreds by your professors and supporting each other in the studio. Was a really kind of wonderful experience. And our friends from those periods are, you know, still very much influential in our lives and how we think about our careers, you know. I think just after that, I kind of wanted to maybe, as much as I loved it, get out of North Carolina and find a city to practice in. And the experiences in North Carolina were enriching, but finding your first firm after graduation ended up in Boston, worked for a number of different firms, and really kind of like sort of soaking up the professional culture in a way through a series of different stints at different firms and seeing a variety of different scales of work being done and, you know, being part of, you know, just seeing how these firms ran was probably started to kind of like tweak that little piece of entrepreneurial nature. And I ended up getting my MBA part-time because a little dissatisfied by, you know, the kind of training that I got in that. And that was, you know, also, you know, gave me a little confidence about how businesses run and, you know, how my clients think and how a lot of the world operates. So that really I guess, was the sort of foundation to where we are.
All right. Excellent. And so you guys met at NC State?
Yes, 1990.
My brains away. Before, thank you for reminding us how old we are.
Before COVID. We were in our teens, I guess.
So Eric, share your story, and then I'd like to hear how you guys met.
Sure. I guess I have to like pull out the Wayback Machine and think about this a little, but you know, I think probably I grew up in Northern Virginia in the Alexandria area. My dad was a very hard worker. He worked on Capitol Hill, but he always had this sort of gene in him. We always worked on the house, always worked on the house. Like he would come home and we would be, you know, putting in skylights or re-roofing. And, you know, we were kids. I mean, I was like 10 or 12. My brother was a little bit older and we'd be up on the roof pounding nails. And so I think there was just sort of this natural kind of understanding of how things go together. And this sort of active building was always in my life. I didn't know it at the time. You know, my dad was getting free labor out of his kids. I mean, that's really what
that sounds like my childhood.
Yeah. And then, you know, I went into high school and took the sort of typical, you know, BTD, basic technical drawing classes from, I would say, the sort of, you know, this is going to sound mad, you know, the people that teach in high school at those courses. And I had an amazing teacher my first year, Mr. Gottschalk. I'll never forget him. He was unbelievable. And then, like, I took BTD 2, and I had a guy named Mr. Adam Musco, and he was a just horrible man. And, you know, he and I just kind of fought a lot. And I was certainly, you know, I did painting classes and sort of a little bit more on the artistic side in terms of like what I enjoyed doing as well. And he was a sort of a hardliner, kind of, you know, everything had to be rectilinear. And he and I just battled. I mean, and it was horrible. And I remember one day he just said, "You'll never amount to anything. You're not going to be an architect." And it was a little bit of that sort of, you know, he kind of like spurred me on a bit. And then graduated from high school, didn't really think about being an architect again, to be honest. And it was just kind of a foul feeling in me. And I went to actually UNC Greensboro. So I went down to North Carolina, needed a sort of different scene from Northern Virginia, went to sort of general school, I guess, or general college. And I ended up taking an art class. And the professor there, who I actually can't remember, but he said, "Hey, have you ever thought about being an architect?" And kind of told the whole story. And he said, "You should apply to NC State, actually. And they have a great program there." I didn't know anything about it. And I transferred in my second year from UNCG to NC State into the design program. And, you know, it was similar. Like I had to put a portfolio together and it was like, you know, I had like collages from when I was a kid and it was weird. It was a weird portfolio, but it was a design based portfolio.
Right.
And, you know, went there, had an amazing 4 years at State, and then worked in Richmond, Virginia for 3 years, kind of after my undergraduate. And then just decided I need to go back to school because I only had a 4-year degree, obviously, and went to UVA for grad school and went into that program. And it was an amazing program of sort of, you know, thinking about design and sort of in a different way. And then I had a visiting professor that came to the school that was Charles Rose and Marianne Thompson from Thompson and Rose Architects. They were visiting down for a semester and didn't know actually who they were, didn't know anything about them. And frankly, I couldn't get in any other classes and I was put in that studio, kind of a little bit sort of dragging my heels because I just didn't know. And we ended up, they brought a real project to studio, which was a camp in Wyoming for underprivileged kids out of South Central LA that was going to be funded by the Coca-Cola Enterprises. And it was an actual project that his office and her office, they were working on up here in Boston. And, you know, we went out to Wyoming and we had this sort of amazing kind of opportunity as a studio. And that was in the fall. And then, you know, they left and he said, if you're graduating and you don't know what you want to do, give me a call. I'll give you a job in Cambridge. And I laughed a little bit and I said, I'm never going to New England, you know. My wife's from North Carolina, and when you get to graduation time, you're sort of like, oh, wait, I got a job, or, you know, I don't. So I came up here, interviewed at a bunch of places, and then I ended up taking a job with Charlie and Marianne and spent 10 years with them. And, you know, we were doing kind of work all over the country, nothing in Boston at all. I mean, really the closest thing was some work on the vineyard and some other things. And I was sort of tired of traveling and working all over the country. It was great experience, a great office. We were doing amazing work, but I had some family. My father passed away and I had young kids and I was traveling a lot. And I mean, that was kind of the spark that really was in my brain of like, I got to change my professional life. And, you know, said I need a change, and I was working too much and traveling too much. And, you know, really the result was kind of Kevin and I, you know, said, hey, what if we give this a shot kind of thing? And, you know, and we really, that's kind of how it sort of the initial kind of like spark. We were still friends. We hadn't worked together in a professional environment, but we had kept in touch quite a bit. My wife and I bought a house in a neighborhood of Boston, and that I would say was up and coming at the time, 21 years ago, into Dorchester. And, you know, one of our neighbors on the street said, I'm moving. Do you know anybody who wants to buy the house? And of course my, you know, brain went off and I was like, I got the perfect sucker. And next thing I know, Kevin's moving in two doors down from me. And, you know, and we just had a sort of that sort of street relationship, right? And that's sort of built off of a personal relationship. And, you know, that's kind of where a couple of years later, that's where we hatched. And,
so you still live two doors down from one another?
No, we live like a quarter of a mile from one another.
So real close. But,
Kevin left me. Kevin left me, moved off the street.
Abandonment.
He abandoned me, but we're still very close. And, you know, I think that the one thing, you know, Kevin bought a two family, and we sort of like cleaved off a single room in the two family in his apartment, rented apartment. And that's where we started. We were in a tiny little room, like looking at each other with nothing to do and no real work to be, you know, that we had, but we just knew we needed a change in our own lives. And, you know, we liked each other a lot and we respected each other as people. And we said, let's just give this a try. And, you know, it really started there. You know, as Kevin says, we violated all the sort of aspects of, you know, never start a business with a friend and all the things that, you know, go with that. But I think it's, you know, it's been a hard 15 years in some ways, but it's also, you know, I think you want to be in challenging situations with people you respect and want to be able
to. Maybe we should change that now to start a business with the right friend.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
Exactly.
There's a more positive way to like think about it, of like, it's a good idea, but it has to be the right friend.
Let's take a break to thank our sponsors for their support of this episode. As architecture demand increases toward pre-pandemic levels and beyond, how are you and your architecture firm keeping up? RCAT is here to help. RCAT.com offers several free tools to help architecture and design firms like yours get work done faster. Use RCAT's powerful search engine to find the right products for your projects and download BIM, CAD, and specifications right there on the same page without needing to pay or register. It's free. RCAT.com also offers product videos, catalogs, green reports, product certification information, outline and short form specification generation, and so much more. Visit RCAT.com today. RCAT.com is your one-stop solution to help increase your productivity and get more projects done faster. That's RCAT.com. ARCAT.com. FreshBooks makes it simple
to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track your time for your whole team by project, and get organized with financial reports, communication, and notifications. My favorite feature in FreshBooks is the automated invoice reminders. I think sending invoices and getting paid is one of the biggest barriers to our success as entrepreneur architects. Who has the time? But if we don't send out the invoices, we don't get paid, right? FreshBooks makes it easy to send out your invoices and get paid fast, online, with a click of a button. And when your client doesn't pay you on time, FreshBooks will send them a friendly email reminder through a simple system that you control. Sign up for a free 30-day unrestricted trial and get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid faster. Go to entrearchitect.com/freshbooks and enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's entrearchitect.com/freshbooks. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community.
Yeah. So when you hear your story, it sounds like destiny. You know, when you end up in North Carolina together at NC State, and then you graduate. Were you in the same year? So did you?
Yes.
Did you? Okay. So you went through school together.
Eric was able because of his UNCG.
Yeah.
And this is what's tough about the studio and NC State is that it's very, I mean, you only care about your studio. It's like, yeah. I think it's like 6 credits and then yeah. All the rest of them add up to like 9 and like, so you're just like concentrating on that. And then there's like math and calculus and like English you got to take. Eric had already kind of like done all those. So he could just sit back in his studio and like, concentrate on that. And here's this guy of like, you know, just kind of coasting in and no, he was not coasting. He was taking it. Very
wow.
Seriously.
I didn't realize he was harboring these feelings toward me. I've never heard him say that, but it is, he is true.
It is. It's a tough, and that's what at NC State, everyone who's like an engineer or something, they're like, oh man, those designers, they're always tired and like, you know, strung out and like, you know, that's just brutal. Why would you do that? Like, it was just the most asinine career you could choose. And, I think that, you know, it was just a pure like passion being in the studio and then making sure that you showed up, every Friday with a project that you're proud of, that you really worked hard on. And even your friends and colleagues would rip you apart if you didn't actually bring your full A game of yourself. So, I obviously was, you know, but Eric was always available to go hang out or, like, you know, like party or like whatever, you know, situation was happening. And I think a lot of the friendship kind of grew in that situation. Just being, you know, more friends than we were like designer, partners in that sense. I think when we, started, you know, ended up in Boston at the same time, it was cool and great. And the way we were working at different firms was just different. We had different experiences. I was starting to really get into projects in Boston and, you know, the development, community and situation here. And, I think that, I wouldn't say necessarily had a plan other than, you know, trying to, I think our first plan was to try to be the best architects in our neighborhood where there weren't any like really, innovative design, not a lot of design was happening. It was just more like, well, what could we possibly build here? And we were, thinking that we could take this neighborhood that's sort of up and coming and provide something to, you know, the development community that was maybe a little bit different than what was out there. I think started to open a lot of eyes for, you know, folks that were, you know, starting to kind of invest in that neighborhood. So
Eric, share a little bit about what the firm looks like today. Give us some context. employees, types of projects? What does Rohde Architects do now?
So we do a lot. I think we're just about, I should probably know this, but I think we're at 30 people now. So, which is probably, you know, I'm putting out of my mind because I can't believe we're of that sort of scale at this point. And we have an amazing team. Kevin and I obviously are the principal owners, but, you know, we have associates and sort of all the aspects of it. We have full interiors on staff. We have 4 interior designers on staff, and they are, you know, we're all just designers actually. And so they're integrated into all of our project teams. So it's fairly seamless. We're all in one big studio space. It's just like at NC State, you know, we're all in the same room, no offices. It's loud. It's, you know, you're exposed, but you're also part of a big collaborative kind of group that's, you know, moving in a similar direction. The ethos of the firm is, and in terms of the culture, we're a collaborative design firm that, you know, puts that in sort of the front end of the sort of our efforts. And, you know, we're just really problem solvers at the end of the day. We're sort of doing that. So, the project types, we have certainly typology, but again, we think of ourselves as designers and we can tackle any project, but we are working, you know, the city of Boston right now is really going through a massive, you know, kind of building boom. It's still, you know, and it's really is in the multifamily residential world is sort of a big chunk of our work right now. And those projects range from small, we're doing even a couple of single families right now. And then it goes all the way up to almost 1 million square feet in terms of the master plan of it all. And so, you know, we run the gamut between. So we're everywhere in between in terms of the multifamily. We do a ton of restaurant hospitality work. And that could be, just an interior fit out of a restaurant space, or it could be part of one of our larger buildings. And then we also do hotels on top of that. So we do the full building with the restaurant. So we're doing that. We're doing industrial projects is sort of been a new kind of development over the handful of a couple of years. And that's been amazing to sort of see how these really, I would say, large boned buildings need to sort of live in an urban fabric. Very interesting and challenging in a lot of ways. But as Kevin has coined the term, you know, the cities need these places. So we need to figure out how to get them into the context of our, you know, of our city. And so that's been exciting. What else did I miss?
And we're starting to sort of, you know, look at areas outside of Boston too, that make sense to us, like North Carolina and yep. Washington, D.C. and all over New England are places where, you know, we have our origins and our contacts and meaningful ways to sort of relate to these places. I think that we've really seen the way that we can jump into a typology like multifamily residential and try to figure out how it fits into communities and work through the process of building these things. And I think that it has led to, I think our enthusiasm to grow has created great relationships with our clients. And that's a real key piece to our growth is making sure that, you know, it's not all typology based, but it's opportunity based. And it's one of those opportunities is the client relationship and making sure that we're worthy of one another, client and architect kind of situation. And, so we're really trying to work hard right now on assessing what's right for Rohde Architects and what's right for these clients that are finding us and, you know, talking to us about some work. And, you know, so right now it's just a mix of kinds of work, and it's pretty exciting to see.
So a successful firm, you know, it's doing lots of different work. You're looking to expand into different regions. Clearly, you know, you have a staff of architects and designers and urban planners. You know, it's when you look at your work, it's clear that design is a high priority. But how much you mentioned earlier, Kevin, that you have your MBA. How much do you think that success has come from what you've learned as with your MBA?
I don't know.
Be honest. Be honest.
Yeah, be honest.
Be honest.
Every bit of it, man. I own this whole thing.
No.
100%. No.
I think it's, I'll say zero, but that's how you
great. Yeah, see? Right in the middle, 50-50.
That's why I ask.
No, I think it's just, like I think I said, it was just some confidence to sort of like see the business as something that can be thought about in iterations and think about it as like a feasibility study, think about the business in a creative sense. And I'm really inspired now about like different people starting different kinds of businesses. And, you know, that's takes as much guts as getting out there and being an architect, probably way more actually. I think that it was really just probably maybe the only thing it did was give Eric some kind of like false sense of confidence that he could like really do this thing. Well, this guy's got his MBA. We could start it up. But
he thought he was just going to hook his trailer to you.
No, actually, you know, we talk about it, but I think, you know, I probably came from that sort of like the side of the architectural world. You know, I didn't know anything about business. I didn't know anything about sort of, multipliers and sort of the stuff, right, that makes, I mean, we're running a business at the end of the day. We just happen to be doing design work. And
right.
I think, you know, Kevin, maybe he did give me a false sense of the security on it, but he drilled into my head early, and it was not easy. And I thank him for the first 10, 12 years of it. But, you know, like you can run a successful business and, you know, do design work, and we can be profitable, and we can do these things, and we just need to, you know, just need to do them, right? And it's you know, it wasn't that Kevin was doing invoicing and all the sort of that part of the business end of it. It was more like he was had the sort of eyes on the horizon for us as a business, like, hey, we can do this, let's get this stuff in order and kind of like think about it, you know, the trajectory of it from a business standpoint. And, you know, we did want to be those architects and designers that actually paid ourselves and try to make money and support a firm. You know, we didn't ever want to build it on the backs of interns that don't get paid and all that stuff. We just, you know, that wasn't why we started this business. We started the business because we wanted a place that we could practice design work. We could have an awesome culture because we just wanted to hang out together. And we also wanted to do good work. I mean, and, you know, that's kind of the core of it in a lot of ways. It's not super complicated. It's just, you know, you just kind of mind the shop. And Kevin's right. Like we talk about Rhodey as one of our projects, right? It's we're always working on it. And sometimes we're better working on it, you know, in areas, and sometimes we need more work. But I think what we're always trying to do is think about the business and think about what it is and how to sort of make sure we're being nimble and sort of thoughtful about our process while we're still doing design work. And, you know, I think we're sort of in a, I would say a transitional moment for the firm, but we are kind of like personally, Kevin and I are, you know, the lights are staying on right now. You know, we have, as we talk about inertia, and we have momentum right now. We have an amazing staff that's really carrying us now. And, you know, but now it's our job to sort of refocus a little bit of where the firm is going, strategically plan it. What do we want to do as human professionals and like our own careers and our own lives? You know, what do we need to do? How do we not get stuck in the sort of rat race of the cycle of the wheel? And, you know, and those are all things that you got to spend time on and think about and disagree about and sort of talk about and challenge each other about. And, you know, I think it goes back to that sort of the early studios where we have a personal respect for each other. And, you know, we think differently. We sort of talk differently. We work differently. But sure as hell, at the end of the day, we respect each other for what we are. And, you know, that's what I think a successful business takes. And it's not always easy. I mean, and we do have some amazing moments too. But it's, you know, it's I guess some way another marriage and you know, you got to work on it. And if you're not working on it, then, you know, it's going to fail. I mean, so I think it's just one of those things that we both take seriously. And, you know, I sort of give Kevin the credit for kind of making sure we're thinking about that. And, you know, so.
Yeah. I think those business fundamentals are critical. And I think it's often missing in architecture firms, which is why as a profession, many of us struggle.
Yeah.
Because we're not applying those basics.
Right? We fall in love with what we're doing, right. And we fall in love with what we're doing too. But we're also like trying to understand our multipliers and our billing and our, what is our invoicing and what, and you know, we feel like if we have that under control, which is, I don't want to say mundane, but it's every month we got a bill, every month we got a collector. And if we've come up with protocols and a plan that can almost be on cruise control, it's not, because we have amazing project managers and a CFO and other people that help us. But if you can take care of that business, and then you get more time to spend on the projects and design, right, and sort of that aspect of it, then that's, you're winning right there. I mean, that's a winning recipe. So, but again, it's not, it takes work. I mean, it takes work, and we mind the shop pretty closely and we think about it. And, but you know, so far so good.
So what does the future look like? What is it, you know, when you look at 5 or 10 years from now, what does Rhodey Architects look like?
Whoa. I'm probably on for that one, right?
Yeah, go.
I think it's going to be really exciting. Right now we're kind of in that process, as Eric said, of, you know, I think, it's exciting. I'm going to say this, going to be mostly about the people that we have on our staff right now, growing and doing amazing things. And certainly there's some, you know, transition in our mind, in the back of our mind, and how that's going to work. And, I think, you know, we don't want to be, you know, personally like the classic architects that die at their desk and a cloud of dust, you know, and, I think we really want to, you know, engineer the next, you know, 5 to 10 years of our own lives and finding projects that are like meaningful to us and meaningful to the team, and figuring out ways to do them in a way that continues some manner of growth. And we've already kind of like indicated there's probably a little bit of growth outside of Boston that may, again, sort of like help us establish that future. You know, I think that we're, you know, being critical about how big we could get. We're being, you know, very cautious about growth at this point. I think it's just, you know, hopefully anybody who looks at us, and even if we look at our own work, you know, you kind of see these steps starting to happen. And I think that, you know, we're doing today are one of our biggest projects yet. And you look 5 years ago, we were doing our biggest project then. And you know, I think that it's going to be a future of being selective about our opportunities and really kind of like making sure the process is something we can still improve on project to project. And, you know, we don't want to get to a point where Eric and I don't really know what's going on with the work, or anybody who's leading the firm is not intimately involved with details about projects and things like that. That's a tough place to be for, you know, it's a tough thing to want as an architect who's trying to sort of grow and transition, to kind of balance that of like finding out how to still be involved, but let some things kind of happen on their own. And that is, I think, where Eric and I are at right now as our own architects and our own business owners. How do you kind of let someone else run the shop and still be proud of it? Because we're proud of it because we see it happening every day. We see the challenge that people go through. We see folks getting really excited about things, and we want to maintain that kind of like vibe here as long as possible.
Yeah, much like you having to understand those fundamentals of business in order to succeed, you also need to recognize that in order for the firm to continue beyond the two of you, that there needs to be some fundamental planning in place in order for that to happen.
And I think, you know, we've recognized that that's going to take a real amount of time. It's not like we can turn around and
right.
you know, and get somebody to buy the firm for us. So, you know, we've always believed that, you know, Rohde is a legacy firm, I guess, for lack of a better term. And we want that. We love our staff. I mean, they're amazing. Our senior staff is awesome. And, you know, we want to be able to have them sort of move this on once we're moved on. And, you know, I think that takes some real planning. And, you know, that is really where we are in that 5 to 10 is like, okay, what, you know, we're talking to ourselves and each other, of course, but what do we want out of this, right, for the next 10 years? And, you know, and it's, they're tough decisions. I mean, and they're tough sort of things, but you got to talk about them and figure out how to deal with them. It's sort of a great moment in a lot of ways. And, you know, we love it and we love working on it. And it's not always easy and it's painful, but it's, you know, again, it has the sort of rewards of accomplishing something it's been pretty awesome. So it's amazing.
So as we wrap up here, I want you to share some advice. You're talking to a bunch of small firm architects, lots of sole practitioners, small firms. Many of them want to grow firms like yours. What would you say is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I think we've already kind of laid a little bit of it out there. I wouldn't necessarily say you have to go get an MBA, but it was very useful to get, you know, get things in place that are kind of like nuts and bolts and things that shouldn't require a lot of drama or overthinking of like, you know, insurance and like maybe a little help on your billing. There's all sorts of things that are out there for freelancers to rely on that really there's amazing tools out there. I think you need to do that while staying very passionate about the work that you're doing and staying engaged and staying involved in it enough that you resonate with your clients. And, you know, if you can't really like spend enough time to answer your phone of your client and talk and solve problems and things like that, that are just part of the industry, then you're probably not going to go very far. I think that our relationship our focus, I think, has led to a very robust referral network. And I'm not going to say we don't have to do anything and work will just come in. We really do chase work a lot of times, but it's much better if you have at least the security of some things like that, of building on your reputation and getting others to speak about you. And be your, you know, marketing machine that's on its own. So I guess it's sort of like a two-part thing of like really locking down some of the fundamentals and, you know, don't overthink, you know, billing, you got to get it out every month. You know, that's one of the natures of it is don't let that stuff go. You know, you got to separate time and focus on that. Think about your business like it's a project and be critical of it, but know that you got to move on at some point
I think that's right. And I think we do focus very highly on our clients. I mean, we talk about design. It's obviously what we, you know, on our website and all things that go with it, but we're really, I mean, in the weird way, we're a service firm that just can do some kick-ass design. And, you know, that's crucial to us. And we love the personal relationships of our clients. We love that they can call us. They do call us and we answer and we take care of that business. I think thinking and being sort of thoughtful about what we do as designers and how we can sort of utilize our skill set for the better is sort of a piece I think we've really kind of relied on. And the ways that we do that are, again, a service-based or thinking about our clients. But if a client calls us and says, hey, I'm looking at a site, I'm looking at this, or can you give me an idea about this? We're like, absolutely, we will do it. More than likely, we're doing it free, pro bono, because we want to sort of work with them to create some value for them and sort of establish. And if it's a new client who was referred to us, we'll do it as well, because we're building a relationship with them. I'd much rather spend a couple hours drawing and thinking about some site or whatever it might be, give it to them, say, hey, if this helps you, great. If it doesn't, whatever, we created a relationship here and built something together, even if it was small. And so, you know, we really do, sort of respect our clients. We love where they come from. We think they're experts in their field, as long as they respect us for what we do. And, you know, and I think it's just sort of that understanding, and through a design process of is where, you know, where we kind of push ourselves forward. And, so far, so good again. We're going to keep doing it. And it's a recipe that's worked for us. And we think that it makes a lot of sense. So.
Eric Robinson and Kevin Diebler, together, they are the co-founders of Rhodey Architects. You can learn more about Rhodey Architects at rhodeyarchitects.com. It's rhodearchitects.com. We'll have a link to that on the show notes. Eric and Kevin, thank you very much for coming by and sharing your knowledge about Rhodey Architects and hanging out with us here at Entree Architect Podcast.
This is great. Thanks for your time, Mark.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Mark. Take care.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a rating, write a review, and share a link to this episode with a friend. That's how Entree Architect Podcast will grow to serve thousands more architects just like you. Thanks to our sponsors, FreshBooks and RCAT, for their support of this episode. Links to our sponsors and all the resources we discussed today are available at the show notes for this episode, found at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. And check out Entree Architect Academy membership. Ready to edit business resources, live monthly business training for architects, a supportive architect community, and Simple Systems, our business system program developed for you, the small firm architect. It's all waiting for you at Entree Architect Academy membership, including AIA Continuing Education Learning Units. Come join me and hundreds of your entrepreneur architect friends at entrearchitect.com/join. Enroll today at entrearchitect.com/join. Thanks for listening today. Love, learn, and share what you know.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with Brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entre Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.